Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
Burmese pythons in Florida, right?
Yes, down the road from us.
Yes, not very far from
where
us.
Where it doesn't... shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be.
What can they teach us?
Once again, even if you're not a fan of snakes, some of their biology and physiology
is
super rad.
Oh, yeah, it's like so amazing.
I mean...
Many species are in crisis and need your help.
The numbers are growing in Florida,
mm-hmm.
where we don't want them,
yeah.
to their home range in Southeast Asia. It's decreasing.
Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
All right, welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Hey, Angie. So we're just going to jump into it today and talk about a crazy animal.
A big animal.
Big animal. Very big. Very big. And pretty awesome. But the Burmese python.
Yes.
Which we, again, promised to the listeners that we would try to diversify the species we're covering. So we definitely, I'll give credit to my six-year-old son. He's like, Dad, you need to do a snake. As he listens to some of this, and I'm like, okay. So then we kind of decided on which one, and he's fine with us doing pythons. He wanted coral snakes, but I talked him into pythons. So.
Pythons are pretty good. They're a good way to start, definitely.
Yeah,
a good introduction to snakes.
Yes, yes, for sure. One of the reasons I think we chose the species is because, and even in episode one, I talked about invasive species and the problems that we're having in around the world. Burmese pythons in Florida, right?
Yes, down the road from us.
Yes, not very far from
us. Where it doesn't, shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be. It doesn't belong here.
It's supposed to be in Asia.
So stay tuned towards the end, because that's where we're going to kind of jump into the invasive species impacts when we talk about conservation. And you're going to be like astounded at how many snakes they think there are now in Florida. It's insane.
Yeah, the population is pretty outrageous.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Like, I'm just astounded. I texted Angie last night. I was like, are you kidding me?
There could be a very large city in Florida.
So
just Burmese pythons.
Yes, yes, no kidding. If, you know, we have these snakes in Florida now, Angie, so why should we even care? They're doing fine, right?
Well, Chris, you bring up a good point. In general, not only about Burmese pythons, which are invasive in Florida, but just in general, why should we care about snakes? Just in
Right.
Right. A lot
That's
of people,
what people think.
Most people, obviously, there's no statistics on it that I'm aware of. But yeah, a lot
99.9%?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm the 0.1%. I love snakes.
Snakes are pretty
I have
cool.
no fear of them. I used to catch them as children. Growing up in Michigan, I would catch the garter snakes and the blue racers. And so I don't have that fear. But yes, a lot of people aren't fans of snakes. And so I'll go into that a little bit more in detail later. But just in general, even if you don't like snakes, you should care about them.
Yeah, you should.
And
for sure.
I hope you stick with us for this podcast because even if you, once again, even if you're not a fan of snakes, some of their biology and physiology is super rad.
Oh, yeah. It's like so amazing.
I mean, it's awesome. So I hope you stick with us for that. But, and secondly, you should care about snakes because they provide many benefits to human and their predatory role, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of snakes eat rodents.
Right.
And rodents carry diseases.
Right.
And so without snakes acting in that role, there could be a huge problem with rodents.
Right. And it kind of goes back to a theme that we've talked about, you know, throughout and we'll continue talking about throughout is the ecological niche that a lot of species have.
They're a really vital role in our numerous food webs.
Mm-hmm.
And the python plays a great role, but other just local snakes in
right.
your community. And just for example, there's the eastern milk snake that's been very helpful to farmers by hunting in old buildings and getting rid of mice,
right.
which can destroy valuable crops and spread disease.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one example. And many species, depending on their size and what type of predator they are, they're what's known as a keystone species or umbrella species, depending on how you look at it. And what that does is that plays and maintains an ecological process in a community.
Right.
So without them, they can really destroy different food webs
right.
and food webs can crash.
Yeah.
And not every snake is going to be in that role, but many species
many
do.
Many do. Mm-hmm. Many are. Yeah. And so the Burmese python definitely plays a big role. I mean, being one of the top predators.
Absolutely.
In its natural environment,
mm-hmm.
not in its unnatural environment. And it's, you talk about going back, we have so many examples of animals going extinct and then just this domino effect. You know, we say trickle down, trickle up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you take snakes out of the food web. Oh my God. I can't imagine what would happen.
Exactly. So I think you should care just for those facts
right.
alone.
You should.
Or you're like me and you like them.
I remember when I was my previous life when I was an undergrad, and I was studying a wild horse population in California. And so I'm driving around in my truck because I was just, you know, we're documenting the population, how many males and females, and very small horse herd. But it was part of our senior project. And I'm driving around with my buddy, and I look, and then there was a rattlesnake on the road.
Awesome.
And like I pulled up to it, and I'm just, my heart rate was like racing. I don't know what it is about snakes. Like you say, you don't have that fear, but just looking at it, I think it's just knowing that, hey, if I get out and try to pet that thing, it can kill me. And so that's like the fear factor. And I was, you know, ex-military. I mean, I've dealt with guns and all sorts of stuff. So I don't know.
No, Chris, I think you touch on a really key point is that there is this instinctual, if you will, that most people have a fear of snakes.
Right.
And it probably does date back to thousands of years of our, as humans, us learning and telling not to mess with them, right? And other scholars suggest that there's probably even a negative connotation from biblical stories or just myth in general.
Snakes and spiders.
Yeah, and sharks. I mean, you can't really think of any modern day like movie where snakes are good guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
snakes on a plane.
Right. It's not like happy, lovely, snuggly snakes on a plane. Right. That's not on there. So
and that's
probably and that's probably a different podcast for a different day about how media sometimes, you know, exaggerates snakes.
Right.
Because Chris, interestingly enough, there's over 2,000 species of snakes in the world currently. Lots are in desperate troubles, and that's what we're gonna talk about today. But fewer than 20% are actually venomous.
Right. Not many. Yeah.
Not many. And the other thing, too, is just a quick little fun fact for those of you, if you haven't already turned us off and turned to a more fluffy episode about something else.
Yeah.
If you are sticking with us, you should just know that you're 9 times more likely to die from being struck by lightning than you are from a venomous snake.
Right. And I, you know, it's funny. I was in the military. I hike in the woods all the time, and I've never, the only time I saw a wild venomous snake was in my truck.
Right.
You know, driving around on a road. I guarantee you, out of the amount of times I've been in the woods, you know, walking around or camping or whatever, you know, rucking around in the army, that I'm sure there was venomous snakes all around me and I didn't know it. Because they're more scared of me than I am.
Oh, they're absolutely more scared of you than you.
And there's probably a few in my backyard right now that I'm like, as long as they stay away, great.
See, don't come in my house. Opposite. I see them and I go towards them.
So yeah, snakes are amazing. And you know, it's funny, you know, before we jump into the Burmese python real quick, two places on earth where there's no snakes, New Zealand and Ireland.
Really?
Like, I'll be...
Fun fact of the day. I would not have guessed either
Ireland,
of those.
Yeah. Like, so when this podcast actually drops and we actually publish it, I'll have just moved to New Zealand. All right. So let's jump into the Burmese python. Let's just talk specifically about this snake.
We picked this guy because it's a big, bad...
Boy.
Awesome.
Girl.
And I mean bad in a loving sense. Yeah. Like, it is striking and beautiful and big.
Yeah. And I mean, we get to cover 50-something species a year. We will definitely talk more about snakes, different types of snakes. Maybe
something
Chris
more and specific. I went back and forth, probably for one of the longest times going back and
decide
forth.
Decide on what
To cover, decide because there's so many cool snakes out there. And
we'll definitely do more snake episodes. Now, the Burmese python's from the Pythonidae family. And this is a family of non-venomous snakes in Africa, Asia, and Australia. Hmm. So they're very old world.
Okay.
You know, we talked a little bit about old world, new world. Now, the python genus is more specific to, you know, the Burmese python and, say, the rock python.
The
true pythons. That's what they call these ones. So there are, like, water pythons and tree pythons and others, like, that are found in Australia. But they call the true python, the Burmese python's part of this family or genus of python. Now, really quick, and don't have to talk a lot about the differences here, but the python versus anaconda.
Right. Being from North America and neighbor to South America, we always hear a lot about anacondas.
Right. Right. And so the pythons are different from boa constrictors or boas.
Mm-hmm.
So boas are New World or in the Americas
mm-hmm.
types of constrictor snakes, where pythons are more Africa, Asia, Australia.
Old world.
And a little bit different, too, in how they hunted, too. So, like, in the anacondas, they don't typically always constrict. They actually like to drown, like the big ones. They like to drown their prey.
In the water. Okay.
Yeah, they drown them, and then they eat them. But the pythons are all constrictors. And so we'll talk a little bit about how that happens with nutrition. Now, within the python genus, there's 11 recognized species. There used to be 8, and then there's 3 new ones just recently in the last few years. So there's the Angolan python, which is in Africa, the Bornean python, the blood python, which is Malaysia, Sumatra, the Sumatran short-tailed, the Myanmar short-tailed, there's the Indian or black-tailed python, the ball python, which is a very,
That's my first, Chris just saw my face. Yeah. It's my personal favorite. I was able to work with a couple of really special ball pythons at the Children's Zoo that were used as an animal handling education programs. Mm-hmm.
And they're from Central Africa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of hobbyists have ball pythons.
Yes, they are. Yeah. I don't know if you can say sweet or nice at first, but for me they were, and they're great for educational purposes too, to help reduce
fear.
For our educational outreach programs, we'd always start with younger children, right, to try to break the cycle of fear then and show them that they're not slimy and they don't bite and they're not going to constrict you just because.
The rock python I would not advise. This is from South Africa. This is like one of the bigger ones. And then the Timor, and then finally get to the Burmese python. So those are all the...
A Burmese python I would also not recommend.
No. And they are. And hobbyists do have them.
I mean, I guess unless you have like 10 people that you want to like help carry it to an education event, because...
They're big.
I think they suggest something like one person to help carry it every meter.
Right. Because you got to support their structure, their skeleton. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're so long.
Yeah.
So.
They're huge. That jumps right into what I was going to talk about, some of the descriptions. So this is actually the python, or the Burmese python, is the longest snake in the world.
Correct.
So they can get up to 23 feet. That's not average. I mean, they say 16 to 18 feet is pretty normal, but they can get as long, they think, as 23 feet or 7 meters.
So put that in a visual really quick.
Yeah, that's long. Two stories. Yeah, 2 stories tall.
Like a bus, longer than a bus.
Yeah. Well, 2 stories, yeah. Okay. 2 stories of a house. I mean, definitely 2 car lengths for sure. Like, it depends on the car, too. It's a big truck.
Yes. Now, Chris, I don't know if I would run towards that snake.
No.
I think I'm used to, like, little one-footers, two-footers that I used to catch as a kid. Yeah, no.
Yeah, they're...
No, thank you.
They're big. They are big, bad boys and girls. But they only weigh about 200 pounds. Now, to put that in perspective, the anaconda is a shorter snake, so they're like 15 to 17 feet, but they're thicker and heavier.
Okay.
So
they have more girthy, like, and they're in the water. I feel like a lot of
videos
I've seen in South America in the Amazon basin, they seem more rotund.
Rotund. And then the Burmese python's just longer and not quite as big. So, like, the anacondas can weigh up to 230 pounds, about my size, or 105 kilograms. Now, the Burmese python is, to kind of describe the coloration, which is really, this is what's cool about snakes, too. They're so pretty.
So pretty. Yeah. Their patterns are just mesmerizing.
Yeah. I mean, the poison dart frogs are still, wow. And I'm glad we did them.
Maybe a better word would be like hypnotic.
They are.
It's very soothing for me to look at snake patterns. Yeah, I don't know really what's amazing. Wrong with me. I don't know what that means, right? Now, I don't want to see them on handbags, purses, and boots, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That could be fake.
On the animal itself, yeah.
But on the animal, it's just, it's nature's work at its finest.
Yeah, it's really cool. So they have these dark brown splotches that have black on the outside. And then you have like that light coloration, tan coloration, light brown kind of lines throughout. So it's just really, really awesome pattern for camouflage. Now, the Burmese python... And I was kind of surprised. I didn't realize their range was as big. And they actually go up in Nepal, which is crazy.
Isn't that cool?
Because you always think Nepal of like the Himalayas.
Yeah, I just think of like mountain goats or something.
And freezing, and snow leopards. But no, some areas they have there in India, and then all throughout like Vietnam and Malaysia and Thailand.
So really able to adapt to their surroundings.
Right, yeah. So they're pretty wide. And when you look at their habitats, rainforest, grasslands. Kind of like, similar to some of the species, they're not very specific to one biome.
Okay.
Not just rainforest. They're all throughout that part of the world. When we get to their other habitat, their new habitat, that's southern Florida. You even said, before we launched or started, up in the panhandle.
Yes, there have been sporadic findings of them in central Florida and then up into the panhandle.
Maybe there's one in my backyard. Awesome. So.
You won't have a rodent problem.
Yeah, I guess not. I won't have a dog problem soon or a cat problem, which I don't know my babies. Anyway, it's great. I didn't know they were up here.
Well, I don't think any have been found in our county. Yeah, I know. So I know. Just, but no, they definitely have been, they've been slowly moving north.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they, again, they live in all sorts of habitats. So it's not just because South Florida is hot and wet.
Right.
It's because Florida is a great place for a lot of animals to live.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a large chunk of South Florida being in the Everglades that, yes, there's been a lot of construction, habitat,
fragmentation,
right. whatnot, but there's still large, wild right. chunks of it.
Yeah, that are still protected, mm-hmm. you know, and even here, you know, outside where we're living now, Central Florida. Snakes, there's not a lot known. There's really not.
No, Chris. Even, I mean, with me focusing in even on, like, some of their behavior and reproduction, yeah, there's not a lot.
No, no. And their evolution, I mean, they can date it back. They actually found the oldest ancestor, this paper published in Nature in 2015, it moved it back about 40 million years.
Wow.
So,
that's a big jump.
Yeah, it used to be like 130. Now it's 170 million years ago.
They've been around a while.
Yes. And this, they found evidence of fossils in the US, the UK, and Portugal. And they're looking at the jaw bones and then some of the vertebrae.
Okay.
So they kind of trace this back to a burrowing lizard about 160, 170 million years ago.
They had legs?
Yeah, little legs. And then today, snakes still have some of those vestibular nubbins or remnants of evolution. So male snakes have spurs, which you may talk about mm-hmm. in the repro part, but those spurs are actually remnants of their hind legs.
Cool.
So they used to have little legs. They used to be little running around. All right. So Angie, really quick, I gotta get this story into, and this is definitely related to the Burmese python, and that is the discovery of Titanoboa.
I love the name.
Yes. This was the largest snake ever discovered, and the story for both of us, being from the University of Florida, is amazing because it was discovered here. Not living here, but it was discovered by a grad student here.
Go Gators!
Yay! I wish my grad student would have discovered Titanoboa.
Sorry, Chris. Not me.
Yeah, you're going to say rhinos.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little bit better.
I think. It's way cooler. Yeah. Way cooler. My son would be like, he thinks I'm semi-cool, but if I...
save rhinos.
That's semi-cool.
Contribute to save it, yeah.
No, but I would have found a giant snake.
Snake? Oh, you would have been like queen.
Forever. Yeah. The best mama ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I love my grad students, but this story is awesome because I think it's one of the things that universities do really well. So the story is the professor, he found the bone, but it was the student who really just deserves the credit for the discovery. He was down in Colombia in one of their big their mines, you know, their, I think it's coal mine or something. So they're, you know, kind of not doing all great for the environment, but you know, going down through the cliffs, cutting down through, digging deep in the ground. And so he's there looking for fossils. Yeah, fossils like we just talked about. And he was looking for giant crocodiles' bones is really what he was looking at. So he thought he found this piece of vertebrae, and he thought it was a crocodile bone. But he didn't know, but he packs it all up and then ships it up to the lab here in Florida. Well, his grad student one night, late in the lab, is unpacking things and, you know, taking it out of all of its protection and stuff. And he's clipping away at it, and he pulls out this vertebrae and, you know, he walks around and I think it was a lab assistant was handling it. And he walks by and says, oh, yeah, that's a snake vertebrae, and keeps walking. And the assistant turns around and goes, what? No, Dr. So-and-so said this was a crocodile. And he's like, no, that's snake. And he took it and he identified it. And he's like, oh, my God, this is the biggest vertebrate we've ever found of a snake, which later found out was Titanoboa. Now we have more fossils of it. What's cool. So this thing lived about 60 million years ago. Thank God. Because it was, talk about 40 plus feet long.
Right. So it'd be like the snake on the plane.
Yes. It would be the snake. It's huge. 13 meters long, weighed up to 2,500 pounds, over a ton or 1,100 kilograms.
Huge
snake. Would eat me no problem. And what was so cool about this is our museum, it was about 4 years ago, had the Titanoboa exhibit.
Right, the local one here at the University of Florida in Gainesville.
Yeah, we have an awesome natural history museum here. And this exhibit traveled around the country. It was at the Smithsonian and all these major museums. So I was here for a while, and I'm in there looking at it with my son.
I bet you were in there like every day.
Oh, yeah, we went all the time. Like, Titanoboa was awesome. And so the video's playing, the Smithsonian Channel video of Titanoboa. And the grad student's on there talking about, oh, yeah, and I discovered it, and I called my professor the next day, blah, 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 blah. And I look left off screen, and he's, like, standing right next to me.
Oh, stop
He was giving
it.
A tour, yeah.
That's
he was
so
giving
funny.
A tour, and I look back at the screen. I'm like, what? And I look back left, and he was standing right next to me. I was like, no way.
Oh, it was such a cool moment. Like, yeah, small town, big town.
Yeah. I've met some big celebrities and some big people, and I was starstruck. Like, I was just, what a dork. I was so starstruck by him. I was like.
You are a dork.
Oh, I was,
but that's cool, though.
Yeah. I mean, celebrities have nothing on me, but when I see that, I'm like, you discovered Titanoboa.
Yeah, that's huge.
Like, that's amazing. It was like, they think it was one of the most important discoveries of the last 100 years fossil, whatever.
Paleontology.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyways,
I know cool. that from watching Dinosaur Train with my 3.5-year-old. Yes.
Paleontology. There you go. That's what I meant to say.
Big difference, Chris, yeah. between paleontology and archaeology.
Yeah, I know. Archaeology is like human stuff. So that's perfect. History with humans. So let's see how these snakes have had big impacts on us.
Well, I mean, they definitely, like I said, have always impacted our psyche. Like you said, most people run away from them, although there's a few small percent of us right. that would run towards them, maybe not towards Titanoboa.
Yeah, can you go in my backyard and make sure?
I would. With a big stick, I would. Yeah. With my running shoes on, and because I could probably outrun most of these guys. And once again, they are more scared of us than we are of them. Right. But no, we really, snakes in general, especially the giant pythons, like mm-hmm. we're talking about today, the Burmese, the reticulated, the rock python. So, of course, snakes are found in mythology mm-hmm. and, of course, in biblically.
Yeah, ancient. Yeah, for years. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
cave paintings and all this and that. Yeah. So they've been in our psyche for a long time, probably in our folklore to stay away from them and whatnot. But also throughout modern day history, the giant pythons, like what we're talking mm-hmm. about today, we're talking about Burmese pythons, but reticulated, the African rock python, the Indian python. Historically, they've been slaughtered to supply the world leather market.
Right.
Because of their beautiful patterns and whatnot. And then also, of course, a lot of folk medicines. Now, do they work? There's no scientific evidence mm-hmm. that it works. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of those beliefs are perpetuated.
Right.
And then, of course, they've been used a lot in the pet trade.
Right.
So they've, you know, we definitely have an abundant, closely knit history with these guys.
Yeah, relationship. I think, yeah, I mean, humans and snakes have, God, it's like a story old as time. I mean,
sure.
You know, we talk about animals and domesticated animals and horses and the impacts they've had on us. But yeah, snakes, you go back to hunter-gatherers.
Yeah, well, and honestly, in China, they're still sometimes even used as food.
Right.
And I already, you know, briefly mentioned that they, even these giant pythons, have been used in the pet trade.
Right.
Our relationship with them is complicated.
In some way,
shape, and form. And yeah, and so with the python, though, we have this new relationship with it here in Florida.
I know, yeah.
And we're going to touch on more of that today. But just to give you, the listeners, a brief background, I was quite fascinated by, of course, I'm a dork, but yeah. this relationship is very new. It's 10 years old. Mm-hmm. It was in 2007 that researchers, grad students, most likely, I think, I don't know if they were at UF, but they were interested in studying male Key Largo wood rat, mm-hmm. which is endangered.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one wearing a transmitter so they could follow him around mm-hmm. and learn all these cool behavior things. A dream job in another lifetime for me. And they saw that this one was just moving really, you know, kind of quickly and all over the place. Yeah. And they basically tracked it down to being in the belly of a 7.5-foot Burmese python, sunning itself, not in a cage.
Yeah.
Where in the pet trade industry previously, you would have to, you know, have a permit and have one, you know, or obviously be like a zoo and have
just
one.
Just hanging out.
But this one was just free as all get out, just sunning itself. And so since then, researchers and wildlife agencies and whatnot have realized that this has become a pretty big problem here as far as an Burmese python being an invasive species. Mm-hmm. And what they think happened was during Hurricane Andrew.
Back
in 92.
Right.
That there was either a breeding facility that potentially they got released during mm-hmm. this hurricane, right? Because the hurricane destroyed a lot of Florida.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
And then since then have been able to fare pretty well in South Florida. And so, you know, in this relationship with us in Florida is, well, nationwide invasive species cost the U.S. about $100 billion in damage.
Wow.
Alone. Yeah. But then just for us locally here, the Burmese python, they are potentially consuming a lot of our endangered species, like the wood stork
mm-hmm.
and and key deer, mm-hmm. and the wood rat, like I'd mentioned. But then also just local fauna is right. down. People say sightings of raccoons and possums and deer and coyote, and then we...
They can't even find them anymore.
Right, they're down like...
90-something percent.
90-something percent. The data I was looking at, I mean, and I... This is so anecdotal, I don't even want to mention it, but I saw more raccoons in Chicago than I... like in urban.
Yeah, I told you San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco,
Chicago.
Yeah.
Then I live in, you know, in the woods here in Florida, and I never see them. So that could just be anecdotal. But yes, they definitely are concerned about what this species is doing to not only endangered animals here in locally in Florida, but then also just once again impacting our food web.
Right.
Florida has, we've evolved in the past, you know, hundreds of millions of years, our own food web that does not include the Burmese python.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of our bigger snakes, constrictor snakes, is the indigo snake.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's also concern that this Burmese python will outcompete the indigo snake and wipe them out. So there's a lot of concerns with it. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why we chose to talk about the Burmese python, because of its interesting issue with what with the numbers are growing in Florida,
mm-hmm.
where we don't want them,
to
their home range in Southeast Asia, it's decreasing.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting you talk about them with hobbyists because they live for a long time. Like just jumping into their life cycle, they can live up to 40 years in captivity. Now, in the wild, a Burmese python's going to live 20, 25 years, they think, on average. So not quite as long, but still, that's pretty long.
Yeah, it's very long.
And, you know, I know you're going to probably touch upon some of this in repro, but these things grow incredibly fast. The Burmese python is like, it's born almost 2 feet or 50 centimeters.
It's born pretty big.
Yeah, it's already like a big snake. And then in the first year, that will double. So it can almost go to 3 or 4 feet, 100 centimeters. And then at 2.5 years, so trying to look at one study, you know, trying to find some research on this. At 2.5 years, they measured them at 3 meters or 10 feet. So, you know, 2-year-old snake, that's huge. That's, you know, one story of a house.
Right.
It's big. And a lot of what's going to depend on that, too, is diet and environment.
Sure, sure.
Know, how much you feed them, how often they feed, things like that. So they pretty interesting. Really, snakes, you know, again, going back just to general snakes and the boas, crazy adaptations.
Yeah, I think that's one of my fascinations, and probably a lot of other snake lovers out there fascinations, is just how unique they are.
They don't have any appendages, right? They lost their limbs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's really cool is looking at some of this, boas and pythons are actually considered ancient snakes because they have two lungs, whereas most other snakes only have one.
Interesting.
They've lost that second lung, so they only have one lung to breathe. But then they have this really long trunk and skeleton. Skulls are elastic, so they can unlock their jaws to swallow this huge prey.
Oh, yes. I've enjoyed watching many snakes consume whole prey. I know I'm a dork. I never, ever got old when I would feed a snake.
I think the most extreme one I've ever seen, and maybe we'll cover the snake at some point, is the egg eater snake. You know, when they eat an egg and you just look at how much they can stretch.
Oh, yeah.
To engorge that egg and then they crush it inside. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Their biology is really amazing. They have a lot of cool stuff going on with them. Now, one of the questions I had about snakes was the forked tongue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, snake biology. Okay. Why? I mean, I always knew they used that to touch and stuff, but really how this works.
One has a sense of smell.
Right, it is. That's where it's really important for them is their forked tongue is for smell.
Mm-hmm.
Chemoreception. And I know in a previous pod we talked a little bit how this works. So what they're using is that tongue, is they're shooting it out, touching the ground, and also the air that's the molecules, the chemical molecules are attached to that tongue. The tongue itself actually can't taste. It's they bring it into their mouth, and then there's this Jacobson's organ that interprets everything in the mouth. So it happens, you know, really, really quick, but they're tasting or smelling what's in front of them. Now, the fork, which is really cool, is that they can tell which direction. So that's why they have the fork. If when they shoot it out, they'll able to tell if it's chemicals signals like either stronger or weaker and whatnot. And that gives them
direction
on where
so
to go.
Cool.
Yeah, there was a study is where they actually cut that off, you know, cut the split tongue off. I don't know how ethical that one is, but it was kind of cool. And the snakes were kind of lost. They couldn't track. They could still smell, but they couldn't track where it went.
Mm-hmm.
So that fork is really, really important to determine direction. on that, on where to go. So that was kind of some cool biology. And then everybody knows, or should know, snakes are cold-blooded. So their blood temperature is lower than ours.
It's and it gets higher, too.
Yeah, yeah. But typically, they want to maintain about 85 Fahrenheit or 29 Celsius. You know, and we're near, you know, 98.6, and then some animals are 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38°C. So, but they actually they can't thermoregulate.
Right.
Right. They depend on their environment to warm them up or cool them down. So that's why you see a lot of snakes sunning themselves to warm up. And then if they're hot, they'll get in some shade or they'll go into water to cool off, things like that. You know, snakes, when they're cold, don't move quite as fast. They're a little lethargic. Muscles aren't working as well.
Yeah, they'll go under hibernation or bromination.
Yeah, and the ones in the colder environments hibernate. Now, the other cool thing about physiology with them is these snakes, the Burmese pythons, don't slither. Like you think of a snake moving around, doing the S pattern.
Yeah, the S pattern.
Yeah, they don't do that. They do so it's called rectinal... Wait, hold on, I'm just asking. So, Ed, you know how these move, right?
Yeah, they move in like a rectilinear pattern.
Oh my God.
Rectilinear
progression. Thank you. Yeah, because I can't speak. So how that works is their ribs stiffen, and then they lifts the scales. Scales lift forward, and then they come back. So that's
kind of a little bit more of a straighter movement than what we typically think.
And I'd never paid attention really until I started really researching this, and then you watch the videos of them. And you're like, yeah, they're just moving straight. They're just going right along, you know, like a millipede or something.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah, but they're slow. They are 1 mile per hour. So you can't outrun these guys. Mm-hmm. No problem. But, you know, or 1.6 kilometers per hour. So easily, you know, get away from them if you have
to. Right. If you're not in their ambush strike zone, you're totally fine.
Yeah. And that actually is kind of good in their behavior because that's how they find food.
And now, speaking of their behavior as far as flicking their tongues to smell... They actually have different types of flicking. There can be.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's if you've watched snakes like I have, just because you're so fascinated.
So dorky. Thank you.
Have too much time in your hands or whatever. You have
too much time in your hands? Am I not doing something right? Are you not writing that dissertation?
No, I don't have any snakes at home. At the zoo, I didn't have a lot of time
long
as a
time
keeper.
Ago,
you don't, you don't have extra time as a zookeeper, but I guess I would make time to. I learn a lot from observation. But so they did. A lot of people that aren't fans of snakes think they're boring or whatnot. But I was fascinated. And so a slow flick is they're going to be, they're going to be smelling the area and taking it in. And then a fast flick, of course, they are also smelling, but it's going to signal perhaps like a strike.
Now, you said, is that how fast the tongue comes out of the mouth or how often they're flicking?
How often and fast they're flicking.
Okay, so if they just kind of do one... It's kind of like teasing out, but if it's like da 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 da,
sure,
then get the heck out of the way.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially, okay.
Yes.
That's
and then,
cool. Yeah.
And then another thing too is sometimes you see head wiggling, and that's kind of whenever I put what we call in the zoo world enrichment.
Right.
So something to help enrich the animal's environment to make them do more naturalistic behaviors. Right. So
and stimulate them.
Yeah, maybe it's new bedding, maybe it's new type of food, new type of soil, or toy perhaps. Oh. But anyways, so sometimes you would see them moving their head back and forth. And usually that's, once again, still smelling. But it's kind of exciting when you see it a little bit. Now, if you see a lot of head wiggling, it could be a neurological issue. So call your vet.
Right.
But yeah, they definitely will do that when they're interested. And then they are often found in their S shape, coiled or resting. And that's fine. But if your snake is moving along and deliberately goes into an S shape or defensive position, once again, that's where you might want to watch out for the strike. And other things that they do that's kind of a little bit different than other species is they look like they're yawning and people want to assume that they're yawning, but a lot of times they're just stretching their jaws. And that can also be a sign that they might be ready to strike at something.
Try to get some meat.
But in general, that's just snake behavior in general. But for Burmese pythons, moving back to those guys, they are nocturnal. When they're young, they're typically found on the ground and in trees. However, once they get humongous, they're mostly on the ground.
Right.
They're great swimmers. They can stay underwater for up to 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right?
That's crazy, yeah.
So able to adapt to their environment. Right. And of course, they're, even though they're giant, they're more scared of you than you are of them. And they typically spend most of their time hiding in the underbrush. Mm-hmm. And in the northern parts, like you said, when they're in the time Nepal and whatnot, they are going to do what's called brumination, which is similar to hibernation. Mm-hmm. A recent study out of Florida for the Burmese pythons, as we're trying to learn more about how these guys are moving and what they're doing in Florida, they've been shown to have a homing ability. And we, when you think of that, you think of a homing pigeon.
Right, yeah.
Right? Like, we're always, it always know pigeon racers. They always know where their home is.
Right, right.
But it's been shown with Burmese pythons that they have that ability, too. Hmm. Even up to, like, 50 miles.
Wow.
So, relation potentially
doesn't
is not...
work.
Yeah, it's not necessarily an option.
And I wonder if they,
guys.
Like, have ranges and stuff. Like, they're... You know, that,
well, and you
like
bring,
their own territories and things.
And Chris, you know, you bring up a really awesome part. Yeah. I love my behavior, and I found other behavior about other snakes. But truth be told, there's not a lot about, a lot of the behavior we know is actually coming out of research from Florida. Researchers are trying to, and federal agencies are trying to stay on top of this invasion. And so one of the best ways to do that is to learn
what they do.
What they do. But I did find a really cool study out of, I believe it was out of Arizona. Researchers there have been studying rattlesnakes and are really breaking boundaries about socialization of rattlesnakes.
Wow.
Now, snakes in general are typically loners.
Right.
They come together to breed, and I'll talk more about that, and then they go their own ways.
Right.
But they're finding the communities of rattlesnakes and showing kind of like babysitters. Seriously. And so it's breaking barriers and then making other people think.
So you know these kids shows with snakes and stuff have it right, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're all hanging out together.
Yeah.
And then,
maybe some
here comes a human scatter.
And so anyways, I think once again, with a lot of these species, we're just at the very beginning of learning about them and their intelligence and all the cool things that they can do.
Right.
And so it would be a shame to not learn more about them,
right,
in my opinion.
Right. And some of the cool stuff about them too, like we can roll into nutrition is, well, like we said, but they're ambush predators because they don't move very fast. So they can't chase anything down.
They're carnivores.
Right, carnivores. And they have really poor eyesight. So that tongue is really important. And basically they just grab their prey, grip it with their teeth. They don't have... Burmese pythons do not have fangs.
No.
They have lots of small teeth. And then they coil around it. They constrict.
They're constrictors.
And basically how that works is every time the animal exhales, they squeeze tighter. And they can feel that. And then exhale, boom, tighter, tighter, till there's no more air. And then the animal just suffocates.
Is it cardiac arrest?
Right, yeah. Because there's no oxygen traveling in the blood. And they don't necessarily crush bone.
No.
That's not how they kill them. It's they suffocate them. Now... again, why snakes are cool. Some of the biology behind it. They eat these huge meals relative to body size. And
I can't wait to talk to my nutrition equine friends about this.
Yeah,
like, we can dork out about nutrition. And
like,
I can,
it's
maybe,
just insane.
They always teach me about equine nutrition. Maybe I can teach them a little something about
snake nutrition.
Yeah, it's so cool.
So they have these extreme fluctuations in their metabolism.
Of course.
And there's a study out that the Burmese python genome reveals the molecular basis for extreme adaptation in snakes. These animals go through physiological remodeling after they eat. Their organs grow about 35%. So their intestines, their stomach, their heart, their kidneys, their liver all get bigger in just within 48 hours. And they use that in their metabolism. Jumps about 40, 45 times normal to digest these large meals.
This is what I needed over Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. Like they just, their whole body changes after they eat and then it goes back down. It goes back to normal.
Yeah, some research showed that within 2 days of feeding, the size of the small intestine increased up to 3 times the fasting.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yeah.
It's huge.
So they can digest these meals.
Yeah, and they think that it's, a research study I was looking at said that they have a special kind of cells. They're calling it transitional epithelium cells that allow for the size change without growing cells.
Right.
So they're not growing more cells. The cells are just expanding. Yeah. And they think that there's a fluid-filled pressure pump through the lymphatic and or blood system that basically... I just have this
up.
Like huge inflation kind of cartoon picture in my head. Of course, it doesn't quite look like that, but
they said even like blood flow increases like 50%.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
After eating, insane adaptation. in these animals. And again, genetics drives that. That's what that paper was kind of talking about. But
and talking about how successful a lot of these snakes are, they can even do this when they're energetically exhausted. Right. So when they haven't eaten for a long time and they really need to, they're basically starving, and their bodies, if they are able to get a hold of a prey, their body can still do this super gnarly remodeling.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of energy.
Yeah,
so.
And then goes back to normal. Yeah, we can learn a lot. I mean, and I think we're getting there. Basically, the Burmese python, small, medium mammals, birds in Florida, you know, really eating alligators and deer. And like we said, bobcats, rabbits, possums, raccoons. They just can't find them anymore in the Everglades because of these snakes. Now, I know kind of one of the reasons we're having a big problem with them is they breed pretty quickly, right?
So yeah, when they are reproductively successful, a female Burmese python can lay up to 100 eggs in one clutch.
Wow.
Now, in Florida, where we've studied them a lot, usually it's in the 30s to 40s.
Right.
But I think we have seen up to 85 eggs per clutch. And so, yes, they can reproduce pretty quickly. Now, the flip side of that is it does take them a while to mature sexually.
Right.
So they don't usually, for pythons of both sexes, males usually, there's going to be some sexual dimorphic things going on here where the females are actually longer, but are a lot heavier and bulkier than males.
So the girls are bigger.
Girls are bigger.
Yeah, the girls are bigger.
And maybe has something to do with the eggs they have to carry and whatnot. But they think that males typically move more for breeding than females. And both sexes reach sexual maturity at about 9 feet. So it might be around 4 to 5 years of age.
Yeah, okay.
But males aren't going to breed until they're about 8 years old.
Okay.
So that's some of the ways that we could, you know, help stop the invasion is they take a while to sexually mature.
Right.
Once they're sexually mature, forget about it. Like they lay a lot of eggs.
Yeah.
And so males are going to locate females through using pheromones, which are those chemicals secreted by one animal to send a message to the other. And then they are found in breeding aggregations of one female and several males.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see, you might see a group of them then. Not that you'd want to bump into that, but
that's
sometimes when they do group together. And then, of course, females, they have a breeding season here, and this is once again in Florida where we have the research. So males and females are going to breed in the spring here in Florida, and then 3 months later, the female is going to lay her eggs, 36 on average, but up to 100. And they are oviparous animals, so they lay their eggs in the typical way externally.
Right, right.
Okay. And unlike the boa constrictor, or several species of boa constrictors, they have live birth.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, that
and
was
so
crazy, yeah.
Just to dork out a little bit, if we think back to the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, Dinner of Doom,
right.
Do you remember that scene where they're feeding python or boa constrictor, and then they cut it open and all these live babies pop out, which is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You got to watch that clip if you haven't seen
it.
Just such bad.
That was the worst of the whole series.
Yeah, just so ridiculous. And you're talking from a movie point of view.
Yeah, from a movie point of view.
I'm talking from a biology point. I'm like, first of all, there aren't boas in India.
I know.
And second of all, you know, so they had some biology right, but yes, that doesn't happen. That does happen in some species of boas, but the pythons lay their eggs.
Lay eggs,
okay?
Right.
But really interesting behavior they do know about Burmese pythons is they're good moms.
Mm-hmm.
They will actually stay with their eggs until the eggs are hatched. And they wrap around them and they use their twitching muscles to keep the eggs at a certain temperature.
Right.
And this is, they can increase their body temperature as much as 7 degrees by doing this. And then 6 to 8 weeks after the mom laid the eggs and she's coiled around them, she doesn't move.
Right.
Not for food, not for anything.
She
stays around them. So that's a lot of investment, right?
Yeah, dedication.
And then once they're hatched, she does leave them.
Right.
And then the hatchlings are going to use their egg tooth. It's just this little appendage on the end of their nose to basically help peck isn't the right word. That makes me think of the chicken. But peck their way through the egg. And like you said, they're about around two feet long when they're born. And then they right away start hunting and, like you said, just growing.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of frogs, lots of stuff in the Everglades.
Yeah.
Now, in conservation, you're kind of touching upon that. in Asia, the population's in decline.
Right. So, Chris, this is where it's like this dichotomy is here in Florida, they're growing and growing, yeah, the population. But in their wild natural area of Southeast Asia, they're threatened. So right. the IUCN, the International Union of Conservation of Nature, records them as threatened.
Right.
And their population is declining.
Right.
And their appendix 2 of the CITES, which means that they're really, you know, they're protected in certain countries, not right. in all countries. Right. And then in certain subpopulations or special areas, like in Vietnam, they're critically endangered.
Right.
So,
yeah, 80% decline is what I read. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Hong Kong, it's the Burmese python is a protected species right. under wild animals protection. So, you know, it's they're in trouble over there due to habitat fragmentation, due to poaching, illegal trade, pet trade, and whatnot. So they're not doing well.
Yeah, and their native habitat.
Mm-hmm.
But here they're exploding, right?
Right. So on the other side of it yeah. is your instinct is here in Florida is to think that they're bad guys and they're doing all these bad things, which they are, right. but they can't help it. They're right, actually super successful yeah. because most likely because we have a little bit more laws right. in place as far as protecting some of our natural places and whatnot. And we have a lot of yummy critters and yeah. very good weather for
yeah,
them.
For them to survive. Yeah, I mean, we did a hunt last year in Florida, a legal hunt, mm-hmm. and they only got 100 of them.
Right. And this is, and yeah. Chris, is the, I mean, the invasive species is a serious issue, and right. our federal government has taken notice, and it is currently, you know, illegal, at least in Florida. I'm not sure. I think it's a jurisdiction by right. jurisdiction to own these. And if you are busted with one of these guys, it can be up to 7 years in prison
right.
and $500,000 wow, in fines.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah. So, I mean, you won't want one of these snakes as a right. pet. Even my snake friend hobbyists out there, love you guys. But I think they would even vouch for this. This is not a hobbyist.
Yeah, it's not a snake that you
no,
want. To
no,
own.
No, no.
Yeah, and then talking about their effects on, you know, the ecosystem in Florida. So getting to where we promised at the beginning, the population, I about fell out of my chair. And I know I texted you last night with this.
You did, yeah. It was pretty funny.
I have seen estimates. I texted you like 100,000. I even saw updated estimates of the 150,000 Burmese pythons in Florida.
And this is just since 2007.
Yeah, 10 years.
And this is with federal regulation being put into place, I think, in 2012.
Right.
To not bring any right. more of these guys
no.
into Florida.
They are proliferating like crazy.
Yeah, they're doing great here.
And it is a big problem to the ecosystem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. To many of our endangered little guys, key deer, wood stork, wood rat.
Opossums, raccoons, bobcats, Florida panther.
Florida panther, yes.
Yeah, there's only 100 and something of them left. So, yeah, 150,000 Burmese pythons in the state of Florida. So not only can you come visit Disney World.
I was going to say, does that our population in Gainesville is like, what, 200,000?
No. Student population is like 50, 60. So, yeah, you throw in. Yeah, it's about the population of here. Yeah. Yeah, like that is a lot of snakes that
Too
don't belong.
Too much snake.
That don't belong. And they're just breeding, you know, 80-something eggs or 30 to 40, what you said, per year times 100, you know, 50, 60,000 breeding females. Yeah, they're like proliferating quickly. So they are a big, big problem. And then when you have a hunt, you know, that only gets 100. That's nothing. That's not, right. that is not doing anything.
Well, and researchers really are trying to be more crafty about it and going after eggs. And in fact, researchers out of Florida have done what they call as a Judas snake,
mm-hmm. oh,
where
yeah,
they
yeah,
trap
yeah,
a
yeah.
snake and then they put yeah. a transmitter in it and they actually re-release it
right.
to help it
find
other snakes.
I've heard,
and they've been pretty successful with that, and then calling eggs and which, you know, obviously if you can get them, you know, get the eggs gone, that's a great way to help control
this, like you talk about this, and I don't know why there's a you know, another Radio Labs, like one of the biggest podcasts out there, but there is a great episode on the Galapagos
mm-hmm.
islands
mm-hmm.
and they actually used a Judas goat because old sailors
yes.
would come in and drop goats off, and the goats were destroying the environment. So they made a Judas goat that would go and go find buddies. Mm-hmm. And they would come in and kill all the buddies and bring in Judas Goat and give them some treats and say, go do it again. And it's...
And with it works. That, right. And well, with that, they're also doing... That's where we're learning a lot about their life cycle and reproduction. Yeah, stuff that wasn't really...
homing,
stuff that we didn't really know too much maybe from their native habitat. And so... I mean, in that part, I obviously love behavior and repro is pretty cool, but we're here in Florida, we're using it as a tool to try to, how do we eradicate these guys? Because they shouldn't be here, and it's unfortunate they are because they're destroying.
They're great animals, but they don't belong here in Florida.
Right. Yeah. They weren't part of our food web.
Yeah. And they're disrupting
food web, and they're going to do, and they already have done a lot of damage, and they're going to continue to do more harm to endangered species.
Now, okay. So let's put that aside, mm-hmm. And if you the invasive part. We do know snakes are in trouble. There are a lot of snakes in trouble, and they are very critical to their natural biomes. Mm-hmm. So what are some things people could do to maybe support snakes or snake conservation?
Well, I think the best thing you can do to probably support snake conservation is A, don't support the illegal pet trade.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's kind of a common one. So that's something you can
do. Not honey badgers?
Right, probably not honey badger. Let's hope not. The other thing you can do, I think, is that if you do end up with an exotic pet, and probably any pet in general, and you can't take care of it anymore, look for help. Don't really sit in the wild.
God, no.
There's a whole other podcast of iguanas and parrots and just animals that have been released because people didn't want them, and now they're, invasive and not living where they should. And it's just not fair to the animal. I mean, people released horses when they shouldn't back in 2007, 8, 9, and it's not a humane way to deal with that. And so the other thing too, learn locally to identify snakes in your area to be able to tell them apart from exotics. Another resource out there is called Pet Amnesty Days. Mm-hmm. So if you have a pet, an exotic pet, and you can't take care of it, there's wonderful groups out there that will actually take them back because we don't want them to be released.
Right. And there's, I'm going to give a shout out to my good friend Joe. He was an undergrad in one of my classes and got to know him really well. And now he's off in vet school, but he, rescued a lot of reptiles and he is well trained and went to the shows around town, and educating people and stuff. And he's a fabulous artist, did some of the artwork that's coming out in my book next year. And he was overwhelmed with the amount of reptiles that people just couldn't take care of.
No, do this. If you even consider it, breathe, think about it, and then do your research, ecohealthypets.com. And I obviously would opt not to do it. But at any rate, the other thing with the invasive species, another thing for us here, for local Floridians listening, or anybody that has an invasive species in their neighborhood, if you can learn to identify it from other ones, and then... Here in Florida, there's like actually online training, so you can be certified and learn to identify and then help getting rid of them.
Right. So if you live down in South Florida.
Mm-hmm. And then our federal government's involved, so we have apps. There's an I've Got One app for iPhone.
Yeah. Angie, let's talk about some organizations to support. And I will say we'll put this in the show notes, which is, again, found on our website. Thank you, Ashley, my wife.
Yeah. Your wife, somebody's got to keep you in line, right?
Like I said, we couldn't do a podcast together because she would drive me crazy. I love her, but anyways, so she's like, make sure to tell the listeners the website, allcreaturespod.com, has all of our stuff on it. But what are some good organizations that we should be looking to support?
Well, Chris, I selected two this week, and one is going to be working with the Burmese python in its native range.
Cool.
And doing research there. And that's called the Orion Society. So I'm going to spell it for you. It's O-R-I-A-N-N-E Society. And they're found on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, www.oriansociety.org. Right. And what they do is they support a lot of reptile research.
Right.
But specifically, I chose this organization because they work with what's called the Bangladesh Python Project.
Mm-hmm.
This project is established with a mission to conduct research and promote conservation of reptiles in Bangladesh with an emphasis on the Burmese python as their flagship species. Right. And so they help with conservation efforts by collecting data on their native range, and they raise awareness about Burmese python and their population declines with the local people, and they provide training and conservation research techniques locally. And then they also work on formulating a sustainable model to mitigate python-human conflict.
Right. And so it's crazy, like, because we, you know, we're, what, 11 pods in or 10 pods in with the species, and, you know, all these organizations, so many people doing so many great things.
I mean, this Bangladesh Python Project, they have people on the ground, they're radio tracking them in national parks, and it's the first radio telemetry study on these snakes in Bangladesh. Right. So this is, I mean, in the Orion Society, I don't know if I'm saying that right, sorry guys, if I'm not, but they're really supportive of it, and so I want to give them a shout out for sure. Great. And check them out, donate to them if you are interested in helping save these Burmese python in its natural habitat. And then my second organization is a little bit more local, near and dear to my heart, as far as being my mom lives in Southwest Florida in Fort Myers, and right there in Naples there's a really good organization called the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. And they can be found on all the social media sites at Conservancy SWF or www.conservancy.org.
Right.
What they specialize in is invasive species removal. And they play a key role in using interagency efforts, so government and then other non-NGOs, to raise awareness and conduct surveys of lots of invasive species from plants. And they also focus here, of course, locally on the Burmese python invasion. And not just hunt them to extinction or whatnot, but can actually help stop the problem.
The breeding,
Stop the breeding and whatnot. Right. And they use radio tag snakes. They are one of the groups that use the Judas snake, too, of course. And since 2013, so we're talking 4 years, they've captured about 250 snakes and... But even more impressively, 300,000 eggs.
Oh, wow. God, that's a lot of snakes.
And that's just in Southwest Florida.
Talk about snakes on a plane.
Right.
Put those on a plane and fly back.
So, the Conservancy of Southwest Florida is doing really good things locally in our area. And if you want to check them out, I give them a big boots on the ground. They're doing great and trying
here
to
locally,
They're using science and then also, you know, and then partnering with federal agencies and whatnot to...
It's a joint effort. It's not just one.
Yeah, it's group, a once again, it's one of these complex problems. There's no right answer.
No.
It's not fair that they're here. They didn't want to be here.
But
now they're loving it.
Now they're here and doing well. And
it's just it's a tough problem. And that's where, you know, once again, if they're, you know, if we could go back to, you know, keeping species where they're supposed to live in the legal pet trade and, you know, breeding irresponsibly of some of these animals, maybe we wouldn't be in this pickle.
Yeah. Well, it's a similar thing that we'll be talking about, you know, with different species, but you know, we thank you for listening. Just real quick for us, if you have not already, please subscribe to the podcast and then rate and review us. You know, if you can go into iTunes, great, or whatever podcast app you use. We're just trying to get noticed. We're just trying to build our
feedback
audience
on Facebook, too.
Yeah, please send us emails or feedback on the website, the Facebook. We have our Facebook page, All Creatures Facebook page. So just please, if you can, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. That would help us out a lot as we get going. And you know, it's gonna be crazy because we're at episode 11, and I can't wait to do like episode 50 and look back.
Right, I know. Yeah. Well, we will get better. We won't be so goofy and whatnot.
No, that's the fun part.
But and honestly, too, if you're listening this long, you probably actually love snakes. You're probably one of the 1% like myself. Yeah. So I challenge you with, you know, share this with a friend that doesn't like snakes, which should be pretty easy because a lot of people don't like snakes out there. Yeah. Or a young kid too, that, you know, maybe we can get a more snake friendly side because snakes are super cool,
They are.
And and the Burmese python is a very big they're doing, you know, when their habitat's protected and they're not over hunted and they're not diseased and whatnot, they can, you know, they can do great. And so they, you know, we need them to be doing that. And
right.
They're Asia. Natural.
Yeah, in Asia, not here in Florida. Well, anyways, thank you, and we'll look forward to spreading more information next pod.
Thank you guys for listening.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.